before I launch into fine tuning, does anybody have a question?
So T equals zero. Have scientists determined where physically in the universe this began? Have they mapped it? I mean, there's like northwest of here.
That was in Iowa. Actually, it is a great question, and it's one of the first questions I asked about this. And most of the explanations that you get are so obscure you can't. It's hard to make sense of them, except for this. If it can't be a particular point, a place, because place comes into existence at t equals zero, as does time, as does matter, as does energy. So it's such a total creation that even the notion of where doesn't mean anything until your past equals zero. Yes.
But just to expand on that, no pun intended, but if the universe is expanding, it's got to be expanding from somewhere, right?
Well,
like in the middle and going out in all directions?
That makes as much sense as anything else. I always wanted to say had to start from somewhere, but that in a way is Lemaître's primeval atom. But the singularity really doesn't let you do that. Honestly, the mind can't go there. When you get to t equals zero, you are past physics, you are past logic, you're not below it, you're now above it. You're right at the gates of something holier than physics by a lot. And that's the beauty of the theory, in a way, is that it really, really helps us. This is a gift. Now, look, next week we're going to start evolution. We're going to have to work really hard to show you why evolution is also a gift. It's not. It looks like an enemy when you start off. So my plan is to do jujitsu on it and turn the challenge of evolution into an advantage. Now that will be more controversial. But this is a problem for atheists. It's not a problem for people of faith. As is the fine tuning we're about to do. Let me just show you just one other thing. If I can show you just two traditional terms for creation that theologians use. The first is creatio ex nihilo. And the second is creatio continua. The first one says creation out of nothing. That word in Latin, nihil, means nothing. So like the word annihilate means to turn something into nothing. The second term, creatio continuum, it means continuing creation. This will become rather important next week and the weeks following. It could be that both of these are true, and that, it is my own view theologically that both are true, that God did create something out of nothing, but what God created is now creative. What God created, including you and me, is now creative. We are partners with God in creation. This is part of the grace of God, the gift of God. It's not like it's all about, so it's just about me, Mr. God, and you guys just are robots or automatons. No, this is part of the freedom and the beauty of human life and the responsibility of human life. So the very, just having a family, just teaching school, whatever you do, building a building, you're part of creation. You're part of continuing creation. And the physics that we're going to do tonight and the evolution that we're going to do in the following weeks, you'll see this. You'll see this clearly, I believe. All right, any other questions before we move into fine-tuning? Well, then let's head at it. This is a lot to do in one night, but we have to do it because we won't get through the other material unless we attempt this. So first of all, this beautiful, one of my favorite quotations from Isaiah, "For thus says the Lord who created the heavens, who formed the earth, he did not create it a chaos. He formed it to be inhabited. He formed it with logos." There are what physicists call constants. Like the name implies, they tend not to change. These include the speed of light, very famous one, the mass of an electron, the mass of a proton. A proton is usually about 1,800 times the mass of the electron. And if those things weren't constant, the universe would fall apart. The physical universe we know would fall apart. These are things that we're looking at. Really what we're looking at, what science is doing. Science is detailed attention to the glory of creation. We should love our scientists and appreciate our scientists. They're sometimes naughty people, I know. But, you know, it is a church of sinners, isn't it? You know, so. But what they're doing is important. Now, they're in many ways paying creation what Mom used to call a left-handed compliment. You know, by attributing so much to nature itself. They've discovered all kinds of wonderful things, and that's why I keep repeating, science is a gift to the religious life of our time, but we have to approach it properly, and which is my way of saying thank you for being here tonight. Okay. So the same with the neutron mass, the Hubble constant, which we'll go through in just a moment, that's particularly beautiful, the strength of gravity, etc. These things have to be almost exactly what they are. I mean, down to like way, 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 way distant decimal points. And if you change any of these things, you don't get a universe. It's not only that each one of these things in and of itself has to be what it is. It's that the interrelationships of these constants have to be what they are. That's what we're talking about with fine-tuning. Okay, first, let's do one of the fun ones. And this is the Hubble constant is sometimes called the rate at which the universe is expanding. Well, it turns out, now, you know, from this word explosion that we're having to use in the expansion, that at the moment of T equals zero, that outward force is extreme. It's moving outward, and it's moving outward powerfully and quickly. But remember, all the mass of the universe is there, so it's got to carry it out. It's hard to get it out too fast. Well, it turns out, gravity, once again, is always pulling things together. The explosive force is pushing things apart. What you have, very much like you see in that incredible ballet picture there, is a perfect balance of the outward explosive force and the inward pulling force of gravity. Now, there are two ways to destroy the universe almost as soon as it comes into existence. One is, if gravity is too strong, everything comes back into the singularity. And then you don't get a universe. You don't get galaxies. You don't get stars. You don't get planets, and we're not here. Second way to destroy the universe, or to make it uninhabitable, is everything flies so far apart, you can't, there's no interaction. If there's no interaction, there are no galaxies, there are no stars, there's no planets, and we're not here. You lose either way. Well, it turns out that the universe this rate of expansion had to be balanced to 1 × 10^60. Now that number is so small. That means, that's a 1 with 60 zeros after it. That's the number we're talking about. That's how well balanced it is. Makes it look suspicious, doesn't it? Makes it look like a set-up job. Like somebody really wanted there to be a life-producing universe. An inhabitable universe. About like Isaiah said. Okay, so here are your 4 basic forces. Gravity, strong nuclear, weak nuclear, and electromagnetic. Gravity, you all know. Gravity is actually the weakest of the 4 forces. But again, it has to be exactly what it is so that you can have planets in orbit, so that chairs don't go flying up into the ceiling and so forth. The strong nuclear force is equally critical. That works at really, really small distances only, infinitesimally small distances. Like inside the nucleus, that's where the strong force works. It also works on what are called quarks, the subatomic particles that make up protons and neutrons, and it helps holding them together. Now, if that strong force worked on electrons, you also wouldn't get a universe, but it doesn't. Electrons are way, way, way too distant. It'd be like trying to throw a baseball from here to the sun. That's the relative distance. The strong force doesn't work on an electron. That's good, because electrons then can form molecules by combining with other atoms. Can form combine with other atoms and form molecules, and then you get things like ducks and oak trees and rivers and lakes and so forth, which you wouldn't get if that didn't happen. The weak nuclear force is also kind of magical. It slows down the rate at which the stars burn up their fuel. So the sun, our sun, for instance, has estimated to be a 10 or 12 billion year lifespan. We're about halfway through it. But you couldn't have an evolutionary process that could produce life if you didn't have something that was slowing down the process of burning up the fuel of the sun. The electromagnetic is in lights and this sort of thing, and computers and TVs and so forth. We're all familiar with that. But all of these 4 forces have to be amazingly, delicately tuned to one another, or the universe falls apart. But the universe doesn't fall apart. Okay, then there's another thing. Right at the beginning of the universe, there's a shockingly low entropy. Entropy basically is a mess. So the stuff at the bottom, the broken cup, that's higher entropy. The cup that is still formed and is capable of having tea with, that's low entropy. When the cup shatters, its entropy increases. The universe moves from low entropy to high entropy. But what's so surprising is that the entropy is virtually zero right at the Big Bang. Everybody goes, why? Looks like a set-up job. Okay, here's entropy as well. Somebody did a calculation of what the chances are of getting the low entropy that we actually have at the beginning of the universe, and it's 1/10^10^123, which is such a ridiculous number that, again, it looks like a set-up job. Then there's another thing. Right at the beginning of the universe, in the micro moments after the Big Bang, everything's bumping into everything else at rapid speed with tremendous force and unbelievable heat. And when these collisions take place, they're destroying everything that's there. They're destroying the two things that are colliding, matter and antimatter, are destroying each other. But there's a burst of energy and a burst of light, and then they're gone. very sad. Except somehow there were 1 billion and one protons for every 1 billion antiprotons. So the protons are bumping into the antiprotons and they're wiping each other out. But there's one proton that lives. And now there are, our universe has about 10 to the 8 protons in it. So once again, it looks like a setup job. This is what fine-tuning is. Then there's a thing that any of you who studied chemistry will know called the Pauli exclusion principle. This is based, it turns out that the underlying quantum numbers make this happen. But what it is that each atom has a shell around it in which the electrons can orbit, spin, what they do. But no two electrons can have the exact same orientation. They can't be in the same place at the same time with the same spin. They have to be differentiated. So what happens is, if two of them show up, one could be of one spin, the other would have to be of the opposite spin, then the shell is full. You say, okay, well, big deal, the shell's full. What is a big deal? Because now if any other electron shows up, it can't be in that shell. It's got to go to the next orbital level, which is how you get the periodic table of chemistry. You wouldn't get it without this. No Pauli exclusion principle, you never get the 100 or so elements that we actually have. And then you wouldn't be alive. You couldn't have a universe with physical life in it. It's beautiful, isn't it? You just keep getting one after another of these so-called coincidences. Then you get to the sun. Well, the sun turns out to be amazing in its own life. It's, of course, a source of our heat and our energy. But the sun is what gives us carbon, which, you know, we have to have because we're carbon-based life forms. It also gives us oxygen. But how do you get from hydrogen, which is a very, very simple element, it's the simplest and lightest of all, it's got a proton and it's got an electron. That's it. How do you get from hydrogen to oxygen, which has 8 protons, 8 neutrons, 8 electrons? That's complicated. How do you do that? Turns out that there are enormous problems, and our scientists in the mid part of the 20th century were stuck. They didn't know how it could be done. And a man named Fred Hoyle, British astrophysicist, brilliant sort of fellow, who hated Big Bang Theory. In fact, he was the one who, I think, gave it the name Big Bang, was making fun of it. But then he came around, and he was an atheist when all this started. And when it was over, he said, no, something's going on. The numbers are impossible. They're impossible unless somebody planned this who had a superhuman intelligence. It was a beautiful moment when Hoyle came around. So Hoyle came up with the theory, being the brilliant fellow he was, for how the sun could actually produce enough carbon so we could have life. Well, you get to helium, whose atomic number is 4, mass 4. And if you add helium and helium, you get beryllium. But the problem is, helium doesn't play well with others. It's just one of those things. It just wants to be itself. It's so stable by itself that it doesn't combine with other elements. So how do you even get 4 and 4 to go to the beryllium? Big problem. Could happen, does happen, but you're not going to get enough to produce the carbon we need to have life. Then the problem with beryllium is, it's completely unstable. As soon as it comes into existence, it pops out of existence. Because normally you'd think, well, you just add beryllium and another helium, and boom, you got the carbon and you got it. But you don't have it, because the physicists knew you couldn't get there that way. So Hoyle came up with a brilliant idea. He called it resonant enhancement. And resonant enhancement works like this. You sing in the shower. Did you ever say in the shower? Yes, you did. Okay. All right. So, if you sing in the shower, somehow you really do sound better in the shower. Yeah, I mean, it's not just fantasy. You really do sound better in the shower. There's a reason for that, because it turns out that you can't feel it or see it, but air is actually vibrating. And when you sing in the shower in that closed space, the vibration, the sound, your sound waves can match up with the air that's in the shower and reinforce each other. It's called resonant enhancement. So Hoyle took this idea and applied it to the sun, and he brilliantly solved the problem. He said, if the superheated helium, what would it be to get us to carbon? What would carbon be if we superheated it, like in the heart of the sun? And he predicted what it was. And then some lab assistants actually did experiments, and they verified Hoyle got it like within 400ths of a decimal point, about what in terms of a million electron volts. So with this resonant enhancement, carbon actually gets made. So you get enough carbon that way. It's a bit of a miracle. No one could figure it out. Hoyle finally did. But then what happens when you have a carbon 12 and helium 4? You get oxygen, which you also have to have in massive amounts to have life as we know it. But what if there was resonant enhancement of oxygen? Then you would burn up too much of the carbon, and you wouldn't have enough carbon. So then you're messed up. You don't get life that way. But it turns out, oxygen has a narrow escape, a narrow miss. It just misses resonant enhancement. Carbon kicks it right on the nose. Oxygen just misses it. So you get all the carbon you want, you get all the oxygen you want, you get your cake, and you get to eat it too. That's the way the universe is set up. It's beautiful, folks. This is, you know, you hear a beautiful piece of music, you say, that's beautiful. You see a beautiful person, you say, she's beautiful, the sun says beautiful, so forth. But this is also beautiful. This is the beauty of the mind of the Creator that the scientists have uncovered. Finally, supernova. You wouldn't think this, well, you might, that death could give way to life. But in a supernova explosion, what you have is a massive star. And at a certain point, the star is exploding. It has an outward force. There's nuclear reactions going on all the time in a star. That's what's driving the heat out. But it's also driving the star itself out. Gravity's sucking it in. Similar kind of thing as we saw earlier. So at a certain point, though, the star burns up too much of its fuel. And now the balance is gone, and gravity grabs it, because gravity doesn't take any breaks, 24/7. Gravity starts to pull the star back in on itself. It pulls it in and in and in, and at a certain point, the star doesn't really explode. It implodes. It comes in, and it gets so hot, it gets so dense, it gets so powerful, in the final half hour or so of its existence, it throws off more energy than entire galaxies. And as it does that, it cooks nuclear elements, the heaviest elements that we have to have life, and throws them out everywhere into the universe. And later on, solar systems can capture those elements. Maybe a billion years later, or billions of years later. That's what happens in a supernova explosion. And that's how we got that. It looks like a setup job. It looks like somebody wanted this universe to produce life and knew how to do it. So you have these sequences of sequences that we've gone through. We have to stop because we're really at the end of this. So let's just say some anthropic is a word that refers to humankind. Anthropos in Greek means man. So anthropic coincidences are coincidences of physics that just happen to produce human life. But I like to call it fine-tuning because I don't believe it's a coincidence. Now, there's two ways you could look at it. One's called the weak entropy principle. We say, well, it's like a plane that's flying over a field, and it drops a penny. Say there's a billion blades of grass in the field. Drops a penny. Chances are one in a billion that's going to hit any one blade of grass, but it hits one for sure. That's 100%. That one blade gets hit. Well, that's what the weak entropy principle says. That's our universe, no big deal. So I can go on being an atheist. The strong entropy principle says it is a big deal. So you're either going to be a sap or you're going to be a whack. I am decidedly a sap. Now, you sometimes hear about monkeys typing Shakespeare. You know, if you had an infinite amount of time, the monkeys would be able to type Shakespeare by chance. This is nonsense on stilts. An Israeli scientist named Gerald Schroeder actually somehow got a grant from some agency in Great Britain and actually got monkeys to typewriters. And he tested to see, he had them there for over a month or 3 months or something, typing. And over that time, no monkey typed a single word. Now, Schroeder did a calculation where he said, you have, I think, 26 letters and you have a few symbols, and you have to have a space, even for a word like A, you have to have a space before and a space after for it to count as a word. So Schroeder said he worked out the chance of a monkey typing a single word by chance, and it turns out to be 30 times 30 times 30, which is 27,000. And then he worked out how long it would take the monkeys to type a Shakespearean sonnet, and came up with the number of letters, and it turns out it's in all the time of the universe, it's impossible. And the number is so crazy large, the only way the monkeys would ever type Shakespeare is if there was a multiverse. But of course, we don't have any evidence that there's a multiverse. In the universe we actually have, that we actually know about, this can't happen. Now, fine-tuning is about as likely as the monkeys typing Shakespeare, that happening by chance. All these things I've just told you about, it's not chance. As Isaiah said, the Creator desired to be inhabited. So here's your options. The cosmos is an accident, so are you. Very sad. But the second is that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. In the beginning was the Logos. The Logos was with God. The Logos was God. And everything that was made through the Logos because of the divine intention and purpose. And that is God's intention and purpose. And now you and I can participate in it. I know it's been a lot of heavy lifting tonight, but thank you for your attention. Past our time. If you have questions, I'll be glad to take them, but feel free to, I know you have a lot to do, so feel free to
thank you so much.
Thank you very much.